weather, which we were just talking about how warm it is. You know, it was snowy, but at least it feels warm at 33, you know. Like spring. I'm Dana Carlisle Kretschko. I'm the curator of education here at the Palmer Museum of Art. I'm really excited that today Dr. Wanda Knight, who is an associate professor of art education and women's studies, will be talking to us in our gallery conversation series for the Judy Chicago exhibition. And I remember the last half of your title.
Associate Professor of Art Education and Women's Studies.
No, you're on the talk.
Oh,
mirror.
On the wall, who's the parent on the wall?
Right.
And the devaluation of
Black female beauty. Yeah. Right. So she is going to talk to us today. I'm assuming, you know, we've all had these nice conversations where we've been able to ask lots of questions, so I'm really excited that we'll be able to sort of continue that trend today. And without any further ado, please welcome Dr. Wanda Knight.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Anybody with me?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is a conversation, and you need to converse with me.
Right?
But we need to interact. So starting off by saying, at least speaking to me, because a lot of this conversation will be predicated on you and what you have to say. And my goal here is to have you talk back. I like controversy. That's a good thing. And the objective is for you to walk away with more questions than you have answers. So, thank you so much for coming out on this beautiful, lovely day. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the finest of them all?
Not you, black bitch.
Oh, and like this. Okay, why is that? Why are black women considered less attractive than other women? Asian women, white women, Latino women. So, based on what you have to say regarding that prompt, and I know some of you have had conversations about it, or you have your own thought, then this will shape the nature of the conversation today. So I'd love to hear your perspectives on why black women and girls are considered less attractive than other people. And in fact, in psychology today, there's a published article that says black women are ugly. Published article. There are other things on the internet that say that as well. So you can even Google black women are and see what you find. You can Google white women are. You can Google Latino women are, Asian women, and find out what's out there. So let me hear your perspectives for just a moment, please. If you don't talk, I'm going to do something to really shock you into talking. And I don't mind calling on people, so. Because a lot of people want to see you spend here in lecture. And it's really interesting because, again, that makes me the other. So this black person is telling you all this stuff about black people. And they become the spokesperson for the black people. And I don't intend to do that. But you have your perspective and your thoughts. So I can tell you everything that there is to know about black people that you're afraid of.
I can say that certainly when I was growing up, a lot of the modeling that we had, all of the dolls and the toys and the playthings, they reflected what I looked like. And there wasn't a lot of diversity. Now, I certainly see that changing, and I'd be curious about your opinion about, the American Girl doll that has kind of identified a wider breadth of diversity, and if you feel that makes a difference or if it doesn't make a difference. But I certainly know that when I was growing up, all of my toys and all of the toys that I saw on the market and all of the advertising reflected what I, as a white woman, or a child, looked like, and I didn't see a lot of other models.
Okay, so that's a good starter. So those of you who are so into that, come on closer, please. So that is a great starter. So the dolls, they reflect a diversity of people. But again, why do we still consider black women less attractive?
Yes. I think there's like a specific image that the media puts out there that is like considered beautiful, that's kind of like unrealistic for anybody. It's like tall, white, skinny, blonde hair, long hair, like, I don't know, anything other than that is considered less attractive.
Okay. So anything other comments? Yes.
I think it's also has to do with the dehumanizing of African American females in media and in magazines as objects, and there's no feelings to them. So why would other people see them as beautiful when they're not shown that much?
Okay, very, very excellent. Yes.
I think also historically, Black women have been seen as managed in this very domestic object of a female, of somewhat of a female figure, who is simply here to carry out duties or to fill in the gaps in these other places in society, and not necessarily seen as clean or proper. So.
Okay, thank you. Other comments? Yes.
I think following up on that, the Black woman would be invisible.
Okay. That's sort of interesting, because that sort of alludes to what was said earlier. They just weren't there. And so when you say that you didn't have them, I didn't have a Black doll either as a child, because they just didn't exist at that time, at least in a way that they were readily available or had not been constructed. So what I'd like to do is, if you can join me at this huge Black painting made of fabric and sort of encircle that, I would love for you to. By Judy Chicago. And before we even delve into those, sometimes we talk about feminism, and no doubt there are people who have different notions of what feminism is, and even why it exists, because some people see it as, in fact, it's really scary, because the more I talk to people about it, and I'll say, well, yeah, I am a feminist, and people get really scared of that. And they really get even doubly scared when I say I'm Black feminist, because obviously I'm very radical, I'm ready to, there are all these notions of what a Black woman is. We've been characterized as Black bitches. In fact, not you Black bitch came from Carrie Mae Weems. A lot of people have oftentimes quoted that, but I question to what extent an individual has really dove into the nature of what Weems is talking about. So, in reference to that, when we say that, sometimes we get these catchy things, but how deeply do we think about or consider what is a Black bitch? I mean, obviously she's mouthy, she's angry, she is insensitive, she's in control of the household, she's domineering. So all these perspectives about what a bitch is. So not you Black bitch, meaning that when we look in the mirror as Black people, we are not reflected as images of beauty. We are not represented as beautiful. And then I heard that comment also, when we think about mammy, the caregiver, the person who is in control of the household, but also there's a Jezebel, where the Black woman is considered, she's overly sexualized. She is very much something to be taken advantage of or exploited, among other things. So there are many ways to think about it, and all of that has to do a lot with historical context, because we know the mammy, or Aunt Jemima, really wasn't a real person, she didn't exist. And we have to think about that person in that household who oftentimes Black women didn't have control of their own bodies. When we talk about sexuality as well, Black women did not have control of their own bodies, because we know that a lot of the people that we see who have light complexion, they are a result of the slave owner raping the Black woman, and the consequence we have these mixed race children. And we're going to get more into some of those issues in just a moment. So as we see these lighter skinned people come on board, then that's a result of them being raped. But that mammy image wasn't the one that would be desired. She's fat, she's Black, she's ugly, she wears a red on her head, she has an apron, and that's not a desired object of a master to anyone. Now, obviously, she was a Jezebel, or were a Jezebel, was someone who was considered a very sexual being, which oftentimes they were and are, then that would be another issue. But I wanted to pick up on my phone. One of the things that I hope to have you think about, but this is first verse by Judy Chicago from her Birth Project. And when you look at this, there have already been conversations that this is actually kind of a no-no kind of picture. And a lot of what Judy Chicago did during those times were considered trailblazing. I have a question for you all. What about feminism in general? And what do we have black feminists? Because when I think about feminism, it's really when groups or individuals come together to achieve a particular goal. It's usually economic, environmental, political, some type of social change. So obviously, when we think about feminism, this is why feminism is still a topic of the day, because we as women and all people have not achieved social justice in terms of many of these kinds of issues and areas. So with that said, and that goes for people of different abilities, languages, age, nationality, religion, among other things. But feminism is just that. And when you think about feminism as well, it's really rooted in social justice activism. We want to be heard. And much of feminism wasn't reflected with women. And one of the things I want to bring to your attention that when we talk, oftentimes we talk about neutral feminism, but feminism isn't the same for all people. And that's really important. And that's why black feminism ended up being a topic of conversation and continues to be a topic of conversation for many people. Because in that case, black women still were not found themselves missing in the conversation. And really, how can they be in the conversation when, in many instances, black people are not even considered whole people, pre-Christian person, in many instances as well, legal issues. But when we look at this particular picture of birth, it's very controversial. But I find it very interesting that it's greater than black. You see the yellows and the underlaying kinds of movement throughout this image. And then when we look at the voice, and there are many interpretations, and no doubt Judy Chicago knew what she had in mind for this particular image. But we can bring our own selves, our own positionality to this work to interpret it. So as I look at this particular work, I find it very interesting that for black women to be evaluated in terms of their beauty. We know that beauty has a lot to do with one's self esteem. But arguably, black women are the lovers of all civilizations. Isn't that kind of ironic? When you think about the oldest human found today, that means that we all are African descendants. So what are your thoughts when it comes to that? Isn't that interesting? No. So let's think about that for a moment. Even though you're blind, very parental, the notion of you having a black mother and yet you devalue her, what are your thoughts? Anybody, too, but I would love to hear.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. A lot of people don't even know our background, our extent, and you don't know like the group you have. I think we're all very like judgmental and stereotypical. For me, we're all like, we probably have groups like people, like black people were stereotypical. So I think that's interesting.
Very interesting. So to have, and I had suggested that black females give birth to all civilization, black women father, mother of the earth. And to think about that, it really, it's interesting to wrap your head around that into a context.
Another interesting, yes, please.
I just wanted to say, like, for as a white woman, being told that, I don't actually think this, but, like, it almost makes it, not, like, more relevant, like, not to say that, but, like, when it's, like, it's you, all of a sudden, it makes it, puts it in a different perspective. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's not important to me, but, like.
But, no, I want you, this is the whole purpose of this conversation, and why I'm not going to stand here, and I got all these notes and things that I've written, and I keep thinking I want to throw that away because I want to make this relevant to you. And we talk about these works of art, it's not uncommon, but like you said, now it seems relevant.
you don't need to couch anything. Just say what's the honest conversation. And like you said, now it seems like, oh, Mac, I probably have black roots. Okay, and anybody else thought? Yes.
Is it called Earth Roots? Common Earth Mother?
Okay.
Like Gaia?
Okay, is that your interpretation?
Yeah.
Okay, and you want to elaborate a little bit?
I kind of see her as like the earth and everything she's giving forth is kind of like all the background. She's breathing it all.
Okay. And that's very interesting because like there's a mother earth. When you think about the Africa as a continent, that's why they call it the motherland.
Yep.
We've heard that. That's not just somebody making up a term, the motherland. Because all civilizations started here. So this is very relevant to all of us. And when we look at a black person or a black woman and consider them the other, because that's their struggle, that's their issue, then isn't it easy to disconnect from this particular kind of issue? Well, they're always complaining. It's not that bad. It's not that difficult. But from whose perspective? And that's really critical. It's really interesting. Here at Penn State, I served as the chair of the President's Commission on Racial and Ethnic Diversity. We call it CORED. And as a consequence, while I was chairing this particular commission, I received funding have all of us DNA tested who served on the commission. And lo and behold, blonde, blue-eyed, everybody came out with African ancestry. They were shocked at the DNA level. Because one guy professed, there's no way. I'm 100% white.
And I'm snickering.
Wait till we find out. And what was really interesting about it, some people were elated. Wow, because one of my friends said, wow, Wanda, I'm black like you, but look at how white I am and how dark you are. I said, but I knew that, and I was glad that there was a revelation for her. And then another, some people became quiet and they didn't want to share their results, but I knew what the results were. So it's not uncommon to say, so a lot of this conversation, and it's unfortunate for me to call it black feminism or talk about black women, but it's important to bring that to our attention because if we don't, sometimes we get caught up in this women without knowing that there are all sorts of women who have all kinds of experiences. And it's not a common experience. And that's really, if we don't consider that, sort of like the issue of ability. Many of you jog up those steps, honey, or walk slowly, whatever you know the day was for you. But for somebody with a different ability, they wouldn't have done that. They would be searching for an elevator or a means to get here. And it's really interesting because we had two friends who are very, they may hear this, so I better watch how I say it. They couldn't come today because they were concerned. One is in a required assistance, and she says, how will I do it? I said, I can't help you with all of that. And at the last minute, they were trying to determine how they can get in here and walk and negotiate this space. So they're not here for that very reason. So I do have, as we continue to think about these kinds of issues, how is my experience different from yours? And it doesn't say that one is better or my oppression is greater or less, but it is a different kind of oppression. It is based on my experiences and yours. You may not see that. So just sort of keep that in mind as we move forward in talking about this idea of black femininity. And again, this notion of black mother. You have a black mother, I don't care how many generations removed we are from that, and whether we look like that or not. Even when we think about DNA, that can be very strange. My DNA shows that I'm white, I'm Asian, and I'm black. So as that comes about, and my sisters have the same DNA, but some are very light skin, and I'm the dark one in a bunch. And again, devaluation of black skin and beauty. I wasn't the pretty one, because the other ones were light skin, and I heard that it's not. So how do we, even within our own family. And it's not so much, so other comments about this devaluation of black female beauty might has a lot to do with physical features. Because when you think about it, how would people define me if I walk into a room as a professor or as an individual, before people see me as a woman, what do they see? Black. And that's what they define me. Oh, I have a black teacher. They don't say a teacher who's black. So black, those are those physical markers that sometimes people devalue. How do people devalue black? So let's look at it from a color perspective, those physical attributes. So let's sort of deconstruct those physical attributes before we move to some of these other works of art.
Okay. So you're speaking like you're going to be product or
make black women more white. Like, can you like keep your hair and move that and keep your skin? And it's just crazy. It's like in the media everywhere, make them more white looking.
So when we say, it's in the media, who are the media?
They're us.
They're us. A lot of people like to say the media is those, this abstract thing that's so far removed that what society. But who makes up society? People. People make up society. The media, who's controlling the media? Who sits behind the, I'm gonna get over in a moment, the propaganda machine. And keeps it alive and active. And how do we play into that stereotype, among other things, are critical kinds of questions as well. So the notion of blackness, if we look at it from the point of physical attributes, the notion of blackness. How is black positioned in U.S. societies and all over the world? We know that there is racism, and it has oftentimes to do with white, and it's about colonization in many respects. So as a consequence, black is devalued. Black is dark, it's evil, it's bad. And think about, again, this plays all into the media, but we're constantly fed a steady diet of stereotypes or representations that counter the master narrative. And as a consequence, the issue of blackness, we have things like devil's bouquet. Yeah, we've got Angel's bouquet, it's white. The lies that we tell, a little white lie, and a big white lie. So all of these things come to us in very evil ways. And as we start to look at even the terminology, the language that's used on a regular basis, without even thinking about it, so this notion of blackness. So when you think about many black females, or black women, we. Though, even though we come in all shapes and colors, from the lightest white to the darkest dark. So really, it's not about the color, per se, as much as it is about the meaning associated with color, the meaning. Because we know that white women tan to become very dark. We know that black women bleach their skin to become lighter. So, yes.
This is making me think about difference.
Okay.
How we're... We don't really want to acknowledge how disgusted we are by difference, but that immediate reaction to something that you're not familiar with. So, I don't know if it's like a medical, scientific, or whatever, but it is something that happens, and you know, once you're more enlightened, you know how to pass that on your own, like, don't stand in the box at somebody who has a different ability than you or, you know, speaks a different language than you. But I think all of this is rooted back to black being different. Think about, like, the Hottentot woman. What happened in that situation is that someone saw something that was different from what they were used to and they were disgusted by it. And then, you know, history tells us, you know, where that went, but.
And for those of you who don't know, well, I'm sure most of you do, but just to clarify what was just said, the Hottentot Dina, Sarah Bartman, a South African woman, was objectified. Again, people saw her, she had what they believed would be an unusually large rear end. Again, that's a physical attribute, because most of the time, it's about visual. It's about the visual. It's really interesting, because when you see a person, guess what? And it's very ethnocentric because we compare people to us. I'm the normal one. So we mark the things that we think are different. And you have to look at that also in media when we think about it. I tell the students, when you say that the bank was just robbed by a guy wearing a blue hat, red shirt, and tan pants, what race is he? And a lot of students say, well, we don't know. Do we know? Anybody? We do. Why? Because it's not marked. He's a normal one. And if you check this out for yourself. But if it's a person that is perceived to be different from the norm, he's marked. A black man wearing a blue baseball cap with red shirt and tan pants robbed the bank. Check it out. even on the media, some things. Initially when I got here, I got afraid of black people in the area. I said, wow, not knowing that there were been many state colors, but everything on the news marked the color. And I became a little bit afraid to say, wow, there are many black people committing crimes around here. But they were labeled as such rather than seeing. Or just talk about people in their return. So with that said, I do think that when we think about difference, so let's look at some more of those physical attributes that are not considered. So Sarah Barton has this huge rump. And so a lot of people say curvy women. Women are curvy. Well, there's this notion that, you know, maybe we should be very thin. But again, that's not a physical attribute that one has. But then when does it become desirable? Is it because of white women have it in? Or work to have it? I'm throwing these out there because I want to joke you for just a moment. Think about the notion of other physical attributes. Wide nose. That's not considered very beautiful. Most people want to have a thin nose, don't we? We have cosmetic surgery to make our nose. We got a nose job. We don't want a nose that's too large. But when you think about African people who are more indirectly in line of the lineage of black people, then their noses are a bit wide. But that had to do with one's ability when you're European in colder climates, from which some of people hail, your air needed to warm. Needs to be warm before it enters the lungs. But that wasn't the case in many other countries because the air was already warm. So the nose wasn't in there to warm. So there are all these physical attributes very trivial. But what is it about difference that we don't like when it comes to somebody different than ourselves? What about our lips? Black women are perceived to have a larger lip. And that was considered very ugly at one point. Now people are paying lots of money to have that. So then how does that change the aesthetic? But see, it still doesn't make black people more beautiful. It's just that now a lot of white people are saying, but I want that. I'm getting lip injections. I'm going to give you an example, and I always like to tell these kinds of stories because, again, I hope it becomes real and these are just not tall tales. But my sister said that she walked out, she always hated her lips. And remember, black people sometimes have this self-hatred as well because we are told that we are less important, we are ugly, among other things. So this particular day, she said this white lady, and I think these are important descriptors based on her tales that I'm telling, she said that she kept smiling at her, and she said she became a little concerned, like, this is somebody I should know, perhaps. She kept smiling. And she said she finally spoke to her. She came up to her and said, ooh, are those Kardashians? And she said she looked. Are those Kardashians? I don't know what you're saying. No, she's looking at everything she was wearing. No, you're not. Mine are Kardashians. So my sister said, no. Ooh, mine are African. They're real. So the whole point is that she had seen her, that she was connected with her, like, wow, you must have these injections just like I did to have these this type of lip. But so again, if once that becomes mainstream, it may not be considered ugly again. But again, it's still on the black person. What does that mean? That's why I said it's not really about sometimes those physical attributes as much as it is about the meaning of something. Let's look at the hair. You know that typically white people have, and I say white, I mean I can go with Asian, Latina, but right now it's a black-white dichotomy or binary, so if you can envision what I'm saying, but many other cultures have straight hair, right? So people, black people and people of color have all sorts of hair based on our lineage. And anybody can have any kind of hair that they want to have based on it, they can go to the best wig shop or beautician, however they choose to get it. But with that said, our hair is not very similar. Sometimes you'll see a black person with an afro. And there was an opportunity for people to call that very ugly, particularly during the 60s when they allowed our black and brown kind of issues. So with that said, all of a sudden, Oprah Winfrey, who is a billionaire, went through the struggle on TV that people told her that she had to get rid of her afro. People here at Penn State have been told that the debate here with me that some were told that they might not make tenure based on their looks because they had twisted dreadlocks. And it was a scary kind of thing to have in front of the students. So two people have shared that because I was taking stories from some of the different individuals about how people perceive their, and these were women by the way, their beauty. We know that women can have all sorts of hair. Now here's an interesting kind of situation. Are you familiar with, you can touch my hair? There was a live museum group in New York. These black women lined up on the street. All sorts of hair. Braided hair, straight hair, blocked hair, every kind of things because white people constantly, oh, I want to know how you can feel. Oh, it's soft. It really is soft. Or whatever they perceived it to be. So these women said, I'm tired of this. So they lined up on the street. So they had a live museum. And they told people, you can touch my hair. And every people came back, strange in hair, don't be fine, you can touch my hair. They would come up and bring their fingers through it, touch it, among other things. So with that said, obviously it created an outrage. You might want to check it out. It's got quite a bit of you can touch my hair. And it's got quite a bit of impact because people describe this particular issue as it was a spectacle. Just on the terms of the objectification of petting zoo, auction block. Because we know that in later times, black people were put on auction blocks and people examined them to see if they were worthy. Whenever they had deemed worthy for them to purchase them as their cattle, their product, their cargo. Okay, so with that, you can touch my hair. It is very interesting that this came about because people were not willing to embrace differences. There are other things that people will have to be nappy, and they may not straighten their hair. Now this notion of, and we're going to move over just a moment to one of the other paintings. The notion of one's skin color. Alice Walker coined the term colorism. And colorism is not about racism. It's about the devaluation or hatred of darker skin tones. So even black people did not like or respect dark skin tones. So, and then you see these terms that came about, and people with their attempt to make themselves feel good, the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice, say it loud, or Latin crown, all of those sorts of things were important. And right now there's a movement called Black Girls Rock because a lot of black women, they have such a low self-esteem and it was really critical for people to start looking at, rather than just the physical attributes, but look at all the contributions that women make and of color. And we have similar struggles, but sometimes the added burden of having to validate or be validated who we are. Through other people based on their standards and their imposed. And we oftentimes don't get to speak for ourselves. We have people define who we are as women, as people, as women of color. So one of the things some of you have alluded to, and there are other physical attributes that we can talk about as well, but many people talk about how we got to that point. So let's move over to this big one that Judy Chicago has, a big hair and people boy. They used to that one over here in the corner. And it has this kind of story. It's a story associated with this particular image. And it's called the Holocaust Project. And when you look at this particular Holocaust project, it's really interesting in how we can make connections. And I see white people, I see faceless people, I see, this could be anybody in this particular scenario in the fall. So when you look at all of these people, let's start at the very beginning. And again, your interpretation, Judy Chicago may have very many different things if you were here to say that. But again, we see from that dark image over here, it's very similar kinds of repeated things in this area. And when you look at this particular space as opposed to right here, if someone tell me what he said to see in this area initially, it's a
tree, someone said a tree, okay, a tree. What else?
And a mirror is the, I think the rays or the waves.
Okay, very much so. They're very connected. So it kind of mirrors what we see over here, these different lines and emotions associated with that. Anything else you see?
Strength.
Strength. Strength. Interesting. What about this communication strength?
Coming from the ground, rooted, earth mother, just driving force.
Interesting. Anything else? How about this being a notion of this person being a queen? Could this be a crown, a queen? And when you think about so-called black women, in the United States, black women's history didn't start in the United States. And if we recall how black women, black people, are the only so-called immigrants who came here without under force. I know other people will say, well, we had my parents, my grandparents were indentured servants. Well, people chose to run, they were fleeing from a particular situation or circumstance, oftentimes in Europe, and they made a choice to come and work for their freedom. But that wasn't the case with African people. So, but people forget that history did not start with black people being slaves and sharecroppers here in the United States. They were kings and queens. And also people forget that we like to call it Egypt, but Egypt is in Africa. So I hear a lot of people having all of these conversations, this Egyptian dynasties, and people still can't really figure out these pyramids and these certain things happen. But black people are portrayed in a certain way, but look at Africa, it's a continent, not a country. So, yes, so we're gonna get, that's what I brought this up, we're gonna be moving down into these different areas. So if we think the notion of the black woman or being a queen, in her own land, and now, of course, being enslaved, captured, brought as cargo to a strange land, a strange country. And if people's different, think about people who don't speak like you speak. If one is forced illiteracy, forced not to read, not allowed to read, not to get an education or to get an inferior education to help, we assume they would be very similar. So as we look through these different kinds of situations at Judith Chicago, many of the struggles of Holocaust, many of us have not thought about the title. This is a Holocaust, and most people think of it as never again should this ever happen, but it continues to happen. And most people don't know the term ma'a. That's a great awful thing. And that's that transatlantic slave trade where millions of African people died during that transatlantic slave trade. Even arguably, the numbers were greater than in the Holocaust. So when we think about that, but many people don't even recognize that particular history and the numbers of ships. But soon, it's my understanding, when I was at least in Ghana and some of those areas of Africa, that they will soon have us manifest in those ships, and they can tell us almost exact number of people who were placed on there as cargo and stacked and brought across. Obviously, many died. Some jumped overboard, committed suicide, among other things. But it's that great ma'afa. So as we move through this, we start to look at how this is like a strength of characters, as one indicated, and it's almost like a confidence. And then as things start to erode, through these faceless and nameless figures that come in and take and pillage and rape and destroy, and even maybe pull, look at the hair, all of a sudden just being yanked and snatched from what they know as people. And then in many ways, forced to work. And whether we look at this kind of bloodshed and tears, as a consequence of such actions. And we can almost put any faith or any group in this particular area. And obviously, when I look at this, to me, I see a mastermind or master plan. The brain is at work determining how we can benefit from slave labor or people. And the only reason we can do this to people
the only reason we can kill them, crucify them, rape them, harm them, is we have to dehumanize them. In a way that we dehumanize them is to, first, we make them ugly. We stereotype them. And as I said before, we weave a web of lies. We weave this web of lies. And that's the propaganda machine, which is, in many ways, a weapon of mass destruction. And we can see that based on the outcome. But in many ways, the propaganda machine is a weapon of mass deception. And it's this thing that you get out, that you tell people that, in this case, the Jews are vermin. They are rats and things that need to be exterminated. And I visited several of these extermination camps, and I've done several writings about the Holocaust. And as I mentioned, this became very interesting to me already based on, I saw parallels with my history and most people's history who have been oppressed or snatched from their homelands. And I sat beside Benjamin Franz. Again, why did I have that opportunity traveling to Heidelberg, Germany, to give a paper at a conference? And I sat beside this person. He ended up being Benjamin Franz. And for those of you who may not know the name Benjamin Franz, he was the chief prosecutor of the Nuremberg trial. He's now, he was 88 at that time, and he writes to me still, and he calls me friend, and he doesn't do as much writing as he should, but he remembers our exchange, because we talked 8 hours, nonstop. And he was about to go see many people. So with that said, he said that never again, and that became the title of the book chapter that I wrote, A Night With Ben, because I knew that I would never have opportunity to sit beside a historical figure that was responsible for freeing the people from his concentration camp. Ben Franz was responsible for many of the people being at Dachau and some of those major concentration camps for being freed. And he talked to me about how he freed them and what he did and how they were stuffing bodies into the crematoriums to get rid of the bodies as quickly as they could. But he took images. They were able to take, he gave all the troops photographs, cameras. And see, that's the power of visual imagery. Media. So this makes sense. Well, these are things that will live on even beyond ourselves. Art is that important in the lives of people because when they tell stories. So Benjamin Franz, the way he was able to tell a story, and at the time that he did this trial, it was 27 years old. It was his first trial ever. And there has never been a trial bigger. And all of these people, many of those in this Waffengrotten cave were sentenced to death for all those atrocities, and in some cases one individual may have been responsible for more than a million people dying. So he had firsthand experience in witnessing, and even to that day he would stop for a moment and just shudder based on what he saw, because he said the bodies were stacked up like cordwood just everywhere, and they were just throwing them into the incinerators and trying to destroy the evidence, but nonetheless they couldn't. But he said that a lot of that had to do with the visual imagery. So let's not ever forget the power of the visual imagery that we see. And those representations, and when we talk about, really, when we see black women or black people, we have an image in our head of who they are or we are, or people in general. Those are stereotypes or representations. And it's just that, do we represent what is represented to us? Or do we challenge it? Do we question it? Do we defy it? And write a new narrative, or master narrative. Can we become the thing we hope to see in other people, particularly when we are the masses? So as again, as I look at all of these things, the time, how even perhaps the own people. It's not uncommon for African Americans or black people or other people to be complicit in what is happening. They are being told or forced to do this sort of work. Thinking about when I was in one of the holding places for the African slaves before they got on the ships or forced on the ships, I was kind of excited because in most instances they were stacked on each other like wood. Even prior to that, there were holding tanks. And there were little air pockets at the top of this cave, cold down cave with nothing in it. And I was like, wow, I'm excited. At least they could let them have air. And someone said, no, that was for the other African people to listen. because many of them, in this case, the Portuguese did not understand the language, so they had the other African people listening in to tell them what they were discussing. So that's how that ended up being. So people can sometimes be complicit. So yes, we know that this is not to bash anything about white people, because we know that this is a system. Racism is a system, and ism is a system. It's not about individual people. It's about a system. And when we think about the systems that are in place that continue to perpetuate, to create, to maintain, and to perpetuate. So oftentimes, we're looking at creation. This is created. Oh, this is a creation. Then it starts to be maintained, and how can we sustain and maintain and do whatever, and then to create, maintain, and perpetuate this kind of thinking against people. And oftentimes you see that perhaps these horns might even signify they're being demonized. And so when they're caught in this web of lies and entangled, then there are these demons and things that need to be banished to hell, perhaps. So with that said, I'm curious of what are your thoughts regarding some of these things that I've shared so far? Yeah.
So currently Comcast is in talks to take over Time Warner. And it was just on the news last night, CNN, I was watching, about they specifically said that that's going to control what kind of information gets disseminated. And when you ask that first question in the other part of the gallery about our own perceptions of I got it as, when did I start seeing black women as beautiful? Because I was very ethnocentric in my climate that I was raised in. And it was with the Cosby Show. And it grew because of other things that were in the media that I became more exposed to, and I became familiar, and I knew about that there was other hairstyles, and there wasn't one stereotype of figure of a black woman, but there was lots of really amazing, gorgeous men and women. But that wasn't even something that I understood even as a small child. And so what concerns me about in linking the two is that, you know, we've come a ways. You know, I mean, I love my Tyler Perry shows, but it's not far enough yet. And so what concerns me is that then you have this switch that's happening right now in the control, the monopoly. I guess in reflecting on these thoughts out loud, what I'm struggling with is, so what can I do?
Okay.
Instead of being passively.
That's a great question, and that's actually right before what I want to leave with most people. So when you say that very thing, most people are passive. If somebody comes to them, we have an opportunity to be exposed. But how active are we in engaging in these sorts of dialogue? How active are we in getting to know people that are not within our immediate reality, who may be perceived to be different than ourselves? And here's, again, another danger. We have a great privilege here at Penn State University. We're the gate to sit here and even be privy to such a talk, as opposed to the people who are out here actually sometimes making these decisions and being in these positions of power. And even if you have perceived at some point, we can think of some black women that we may, but oftentimes this issue of colorism, when we even think about this Black America pageant, among other things, because black women weren't perceived to be pretty enough to compete against white people. So you have to have a black pageant. And to even have some level of equity to say, well, we can recognize it in a different way. You don't see it compared to a white woman, but we'll have this Black America pageant. And we do see some growth, and sometimes we're seeing, but the first this Black America was home. Does anyone know? Vanessa Williams. And guess what? When she won, they interviewed people and said, well, what do you think about Vanessa Williams winning? And do you know their comments? Oh, well, yeah, she's the first black, but she looks white, she's got green eyes, she's very white-like, long hair, blonde. Even with Beyonce, when you think about how they had to lighten her for a cover of a magazine, and the hair is blonde, and anyone closer to white-like, or the features of a dominant group or culture, are those that are perceived to be more beautiful. And as we walk away, how do we, and some people will say to me, well, I know, guys will say, well, I think black women are beautiful, I just would never date one. Okay. Interesting.
So, but yet there's a lot of layers there. I mean, they just are not willing to admit it sometimes, or my I would never bring, or even a woman or a partner, whatever one's sexual identification is, we don't want to bring one home. We can admire them from afar. And it's really interesting how this issue of colorism has played out in even many different kinds of cultures, because white people don't want to be too white. Well, I look like a ghost. You need to get tan. Watch when the summertime comes. Watch how many tanning things will happen. Because it's not too cold to be too white.
But you sure don't want to be too dark, so the suntan.
Pantone bleaching cream come in. So people want this kind of mulatto, kind of brown skin tone that's becoming the real kind of way to look, one that kind of value that's not uncommon. So that goes back to the colorism, not too dark. And even people are choosing their mate and partners accordingly. Even if it's a two woman situation, two men, or a powerful woman might define themselves, they're looking to adopt someone who have that kind of skin tone. And I think that's very interesting. So as we even look at that, how far have we removed ourselves? Are we really beyond a lot of this colorism, racism, sexism that we sit here and have these conversations about? And bringing ourselves to the day, Heather made a comment, but what can we do about it? What can we do about it? We collectively, those who care about women, who care about human beings, who care about people in general, issues with equity, and really feminism is just that. It's about equity. It's about social justice. People are not asking for a leg up. People are being said that affirm me, recognize me, value me, support me in having an equal opportunity to achieve and be successful. So what is each person's responsibility in terms of helping that happen? And we know the media is there. I think about, this may now make it about five media giants that monopolize the entire. They're the propaganda machines, if you will, who get to create the stories. They have the power to create the stories. And they typically, unfortunately, are men. So we go back to this issue of feminism, not that men can't be feminists, but oftentimes it's different kinds of principles. So with that said, maybe we'll get more of the same, or maybe it'll be very different. But anytime you get a monopoly, then we don't have the voices of all people represented. So what is your role and your responsibility in terms of shattering, dismantling oppression? As we know, we can't say that we are there, we have arrived, or even if white people feel that they have arrived, if the black sisters have not arrived. If we are sisters in the struggle, brothers in the struggle, and we're fighting for our rights. I think we advocate for our rights, because a fight assumes that one will win and the other will lose. I believe in advocating, because we can advocate together. We can build strong coalitions together to achieve a particular outcome or goal. And one of those initial ways to do that is to have these honest conversations with ourselves. And whatever comes out, the bias, the prejudice, the good, the bad, the ugly, that's okay. Because that's when we get to really look in the mirror. And I always tell people, and it's really apropos, that using this term, mirror, mirror on the wall, it's a double entendre. Because I believe, first and foremost, knowledge of self is critical. When we have knowledge of self, because guess what? Whenever there's racism or conflict, guess who's always there? You are. So when we have the knowledge in any type of interaction with an individual, when we have the knowledge of who we are, we are spending time looking in the mirror, getting a good understanding of self, as opposed to always looking out the window. Look at what those people do. Those are the other. We can't see ourselves when we spend the time looking out the window. But then that's judging, that's looking at people. When we look at ourselves, what are my thoughts and ideas about these people? How do I represent myself in relationship to others? Are really important questions that we have to have for ourselves. So what will you do differently? You've been coming to these talks now. What is different? What will you do as a consequence? I know some come because it's a required class. But when I think about even as simple things as Gabby Douglas. You remember who she is? Okay. The only thing that people could talk about was her hair. I don't know if you're aware of that. When she won gold medal, I mean, United States, the first thing said, what's up with the hair? All the people tweeting everywhere. The conversation was about her hair. Finally, people said, stop. That's so ridiculous. We're not celebrating this young lady as an individual that she is, among other things. So I'm really curious about what will be different. How do we play into those stereotypes? How do we ultimately turn Black beauty into beauty in general? And how do we learn to affirm, appreciate, and value diversity? Anybody got a few closing thoughts for me?
I have to say, I love what you said about dialogue. You know, having, you know, a lot of us here, I'm sure, have a lot of thoughts of compassion, but to have the courage to have acts of compassion and be able to bestow upon, you know, other people with dialogue and have compassionate dialogues, to have education of, you know, love and just, I mean, compassion, you know. It's so easy to say, oh, yeah, I can accept it, but, you know, to show acts where you can truly prove, like what you said, you know, oh, she's a beautiful Black woman, but I would never date her. You know, there's actions out there to show that we are truly a compassionate human, like humanistic society, where we can, you know, act upon our beautiful woman.
Very excellent. Very well said. Other people, other thoughts? So where do you go from here? It's sort of like people writing a book and we put it on the shelf, we don't use it. But what about you? Because a lot of people look for other people. There is no Superman coming. So a lot of people talk about Superman. I would say maybe Superwoman will come, perhaps. But nonetheless,
maybe she's Judy Chicago.
or another sort of person. And sometimes people, and just because Judy has gotten a voice, her voice has been amplified in various ways. But there are so many sheroes out there that are invisible. They're nameless and faceless. That haven't gotten the recognition that Judy Chicago has. And now Judy Chicago is a Jewish woman, but also she's a white woman. And sometimes that color does play into that. And I told one of the people who wrote, Peggy McIntosh, she and I had a conversation on Tech and Invisible NASDAQ. Most of you probably read that very famous article. And she had gotten a grant of several $1 million to talk about race. But when Black people talk about that in advance, we're going to get a complaint. So again, how do we validate and affirm? Again, one person's kind of experience over another. So therefore, her voice and maybe is powerful, but other people, and I know there are other people that we talk about, maybe Bell Hooks or there are different other activists, but those are people out there. What about you? You. Because you can make the difference. And I really do think that's really going to be where it starts, not waiting for that one hero or hero to be the big voice. And Judy Chicago has been a trailblazer, nonetheless. There are trailblazers in this room. And hopefully this will not stop here with that conversation. It's tough, it's difficult, it's messy. Sometimes people don't want to hear it. But you pose it as a question for why? Why do we devalue? Even though today we're talking about Black women's beauty, but why do we devalue certain people? It's about difference. So with that said, any closing thoughts, remarks about this experience challenged me. The goal was to have you think, not to provide answers for you, but to ask about what each person's responsibility is to move the message forward. It could be in the form of art. It could be in the form of our writing. It could be in the form of our voices. But we do not have a responsibility.
You know, something this reminds me of, and this is going to sound like I'm sort of making a joke, but I'm not. There is the sportscaster in Texas who has gotten a lot of recognition, a lot of sharing on social media for his discussion about, last name is Sam, he's a football player who just came out in Missouri. And he gave a rather passionate discussion of, you know, why is it not okay for this young man to come out when, you know, and people, football teams were starting confidentially to say, you know, we're not sure we can deal with that. When men can, you know, beat their partners and pull their hair out by the roots, but they're still considered okay for, you know, the draft and
you know, people can engage in all sorts of activities that we sort of look down on, but he's not okay for the draft. And my own stereotype was absolutely shattered, and I'm really embarrassed that I had it. I guess I just didn't think a sports caster from Texas would have such an impassioned defense. And then he dropped Audre Lorde. He dropped Audre Lorde. And I just thought, oh my gosh, there's hope for the world. Because, you know, having a 16-year-old sports caster is having such an impassioned defense of a young black man who had quite a difficult upbringing. Who's being very open and free about himself, and I think really brave. And then, you know, this older guy was like, you know, I don't understand his experience. I can't say that this is my world, but he's part of my world. And so, sort of, you know, making and considering these things as part of your life and part of your work and part of your existence is really the only way we're going to move on.
Exactly, and those are excellent words. And I'm going to ask you just to do something, if you will. Make yourself vulnerable. That makes you vulnerable. This young man is vulnerable. And when we usually define vulnerable, whoever the proverbial we are, it usually looks at from a position of weakness. But really, vulnerability has to do with courage. Because when we are vulnerable, we have to put ourselves out there. You have to have courage enough to come out, to speak about these topics. And yeah, people may not accept it well. They may even attack you on those issues. But you make yourself vulnerable. It's about opening the heart space. Dr. Brene Brown talks about that. Her dissertation is about opening the heart space. Even today is Valentine's Day. When we tell someone we love them, they may very well reject it and say, oh, you don't love me, or I don't care, I don't want you, or whatever. But we have to open. And guess what? We are not open to receive unless we're open to give, because the hand is extended. So with that said, make yourself vulnerable, if you will, and open your heart space, and not only show compassion for people, but be passionate about these issues, because that is what is going to move and amplify the voice of all individuals so that we don't really need these kinds of conversations in the future. So thank you so much for being here.
So Caretaker Boyd is not here, and I'm not...